This is the Black Chisel Podcast. Real people, real experiences, real resilience.
I'm going to kick it off because we're right on seven and I don't mess around, as you know. I'm going to introduce our guest this morning, a friend of mine, a gentleman I've been fortunate enough to know for a period of time. Absolutely massive fan of his. I've got his poster on my wall at home. I've had it there since he was a Northern Eagle back in the QAFL. I'm making that shit up. But anyway, I want to introduce Daniel Pratt. So if we could, microphones off, with the exception of myself and Pratty, we're going to have a little bit of a chat. And Pratty's going to share some insights and some wisdom. So looking forward to that. Good morning, Mr. Pratt.
G'day,
how
mate.
Are you?
Good, great. How you going, mate?
Mate, you
don't know how much wisdom will come out of my mouth, but we'll find out soon enough.
My understanding is plenty, because my understanding from you and I having our conversation last week and early this week was, you know, the AFL Assistant Coach of the Year award, mate. Like, you're the winner. So at the end of the day, you're the best assistant coach out there. And I keep dropping the assistant bit. I just keep saying you're the best coach out there.
Well, yeah, classified is the same thing, couldn't you?
It's
great honour, mate.
Yeah, good on you, mate. Well done to you. Congratulations to you, mate. And what a journey it's been for you, you know, from the start of your football career to your time with North Melbourne and the likes, and then obviously Brisbane as well was in there somewhere. And then the Eagles, you know, we'll talk about that a little bit without going into the detail, more around the skills that you use, the principles to get you through a tough couple of final seasons there, I guess. But you've landed well, mate. The Western Bulldog these days, living the gangster lifestyle in Melbourne, drinking lattes and coffees and espressos and on the foreshore there. It must be a good life for you.
Yeah, well, it's funny. When I moved to Perth, I was living in Scarborough for most of the time I was there, and there was no coffee shops down the front. Now it's booming. So coming back to Melbourne, I've realised that the coffee in Perth is actually better now, which is unfortunate for me and my partner. She's West Australian, yeah. So she's trying to adjust as well. But we've got one good spot about 8-10 minute drive away from where we are in Kingsville, which is in the west of Melbourne now. So it's just starting to warm up as well here, which is nice. 21 today. It's been very miserable winter. So coffees are okay, not as good as Perth, and the weather's catching up.
Well, mate, we've actually got so what do we got here? You can settle the podcast here. You just 1 hour award. Who's that? Geez, that was generous. Far out, Paddy. Got a nice little message come up. Someone's a fan, I think, clearly of yours, not of mine. But anyway, we've got Melbourne weather over here today, Paddy, because we've had the last few days. It's been wet, rainy and wild, and hence why I'm dressed in my little semi-flannel lumberjack shirt. I had to navigate my way in here in the Raptor this morning amongst the puddles and the rain. So, mate, it's been tough.
How much is your beard, mate?
Thank you, mate. And you know, I put special attention to it this morning. Mate, I was going to mention just then when you said about Scarborough, I mean, you would have been a regular at the White Sands Hotel, wouldn't you? The White Sands Tavern.
I never went downstairs. I have used the drive-through a few. Oh, I saw there was a TAB in there, and a couple of mates wanted to have a bet, and we opened the door, and fortunately for me, we didn't go in. But I've heard lots of stories about the White Sands. The Indy Bar, on the other hand, on the other side, is a good establishment. A couple of open mic nights there, and listen to some live music's always been nice.
Mate, you're not selling it. I've been to the White Sands. I've been to the White Sands Tavern. I'm still cleaning those shoes. Mate, Pratty, mate, all seriousness, mate, thank you very much for joining us today. And, like, well done to you, mate. You know, you and I have had a relationship for the last few years, and it's been great, you know. And just to paint the picture for people that are listening this morning, it was during COVID that we met, because during COVID shut us all down, right? It shut down much of what we did, but very much of what you guys as the Eagles did, made life very challenging. And as a result, we were fortunate enough to bring yourself and a few others. I forget them, mate. They're secondary to me now. I only remember Daniel Pratt. That we sent you guys up to the likes of Cooley and Karina and others, and you spent some time up there with the people, immersed yourselves in the culture, threw the footy around, whatever it needed to be, to help each other. And from that, you and I built a very healthy relationship. That continues where we coach the coach, right? We help each other learn, and it's been great. Mate, remind me, where did you go? I met you at Cooley, right?
Yeah, coolly, I went up there for a couple of swings in 21, whatever year it was. So it was end of 20, so I started 20. It was a really interesting period for the AFL because we played round one and West Coast Melbourne was the last game of round one, which was on a Sunday. And after the game, the season got called off indefinitely. So I was like, okay, well, we'll see what happens for the next few weeks and what we worked through. And then I rolled in next morning and we got told we were all getting stood down and with 2 weeks' pay. So it went from being expecting to play a full season of AFL or coach for me, but found out the next afternoon after we did the game review that we would be required for about three more hours for the day. And then we had 2 weeks with full pay and then that was it. So the relationship between the club, West Coast Res, was strong through the sponsorship with Lathlane Park, and we're fortunate enough to get roll, which was great. It was great to go up and experience a different culture or different lifestyle. And I've been in football for 20, it's coming up my 25th year this year. So I have worked outside of football for periods, but I've always been connected to the AFL. So it was a bit of an eye opener for me that it's a bloody hard life up on the sites, and I'll try to contribute as much as I could and support much as I could. But it was really a real eye opener.
Yeah, and you did, mate. I mean, you know, once we got you out of that air conditioning and away from that coffee machine, that's where I met you. Who was the other player that was up there with you, Pratty? I forget. He was good
gentleman. He did the other side of the swing, Anthony Jones.
That's
the one. He was strength and conditioning at the club.
Yeah,
a great man. He's still involved in Perth football. Fantastic. He's an assistant coach at Claremont. So, yeah, good man.
Yeah, good stuff, Pratty. Well, mate, I'm going to take advantage of that little intro in because, you know, right now in an organisation such as ours, I mean, we're going through a bit of a challenging time ourselves because it's a commodity downturn period, which is what the industry does. And unfortunately, that means that they lean right up and thin right out. And unfortunately, like your good self, some people unfortunately get notified that this month, this week, whatever it be, is the end of it for you. Which is very unsettling. So I want to take advantage of that for a second and ask the question, because we are here to talk a lot about resilience and stress management and those kind of things that help us navigate this challenging thing called life. Pratty gets tapped on the shoulder at training, so to speak. He gets told that he's got 2 weeks' pay and a few hours' worth of work left after thinking and planning that he had a year ahead of him and a successful year ahead of him in the football world. What do you do, mate? How do you take that home? How do you cope?
Yeah, well, it was a bit of a slap in the face, to be honest, because the industry itself, highly lucrative and successful, the AFL, if you just talk about the AFL as a brand. So it was really disappointing that they couldn't support us further than they did. And, you know, fortunately for me, being at West Coast, we were able to get 2 weeks' pay. Some clubs didn't get any. They got stood down the next day. The AFL support them financially on, you know, it's almost a week-to-week basis due to the nature of having 8 teams in Melbourne and some of them are demographically locked.
Mm-hmm.
So and are geographically locked as well. So they can't build out their support any further than pretty much the area they're in. So they had no leg to stand on, and that was the equalisation of the comp made that decision easy for the AFL, but it was unfortunate for us. So telling my partner, we just had a young daughter. So Amelia, she's now 5, but she was 3 or 4 months at the time.
Wow.
I was really lucky, actually. There's a player, I'm sure a lot of people have heard of him, Jeremy McGovern, who I was directly coached for most of my time there. He was in my line group. He actually called me and offered me $10,000 for the support I'd given him because he heard. So he said, I'll wire transfer you $10,000 right now if you want it. And I couldn't take it because my relationship with him is deeper than that. So I sat down a bit and I'd fortunately done a bit of work on myself over the previous years and really worked out who I was as a person. And I just went back to those values and I thought, okay, what's my personal values and then what's the strengths I bring. So when the conversation with MinRes came up, I was like, right, I'm gonna lock right in, get nice and deep here. And between, I think there was six of us who went out with MinRes, a few guys went out with BHP. We tried to work out a bit of a program that we could provide that was consistent amongst the group. So on the different sites. So if we did have to move, it became a longer term piece for us. We were still of value at the time. And fortunately for us, the iron ore price was just starting to boom during that period. So once we got the role, I felt like there was going to be some longevity in it. But fortunately for us, we ended up back within the AFL program within about 12 or 14 weeks. So yeah, going back to those defining strengths probably was the piece for me that I thought, okay, I know who I am and I know what I can provide. So let's go after that and don't panic was probably the other thing. Yeah. Obviously, there's a limited resource of finance depending on everyone's situation. And I'm not saying I'm well off. I would say I'm fortunate in the industry I'm in, but there's still limitations with how long that could last without anything happening. But I just backed in the work I'd done previous to COVID hitting.
Well done, Pratty. Hey, Pratty, I'm just the biggest thing that got my attention then was the incredible gesture and what do you want to call it, the great qualities and character of the individual that offered you the McGovern or whatever it was that offered you the 10K to get you through a tough time. Mate, let's talk a little bit more. Your playing career, let's go right back. Playing career, start of the Northern Eagles. I'm looking at this out of the corner of my eye off one of the other screens that I've got because, you and I have joked about this much. I'm not an AFL person as such. I'm a rugby league background. And then you sort of got drafted into the Brisbane, is that correct? And then from there, Kangaroos, back to Brisbane, back to Kangaroos, something along those lines. Tell me about your playing career.
Yep. I guess if I start back, I'm talking about overarching themes of resilience and how you manage everything along with that. I was fortunate enough, because I'm from Queensland, it's a rugby league state, so growing up, I think it was when I was maybe six or seven, there's the local rugby club and the local AFL club, and my parents are Victorian. So fortunately for them and me now, I chose the AFL path. And growing up in Queensland, north of Brisbane, about 25 k's north, it was quite rural back then. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of banter around me playing AFL, and I don't want to be politically incorrect, but the gay AFL, how high are your shorts, all that sort of stuff. So I'm sure you've used a couple of those clouds on the journey. But
that doesn't sound like league. That doesn't sound like league supporters. But anyway, go on.
So I think from the beginning, I always was challenged with what I did. And then I had some talent and I ended up playing up year levels as a junior. So I'd play as a 10-year-old, I'd play under 12s and 12-year-old, I'd play under 14s. And I played a under 18s game when I was, I think, 13. So I was playing in, this is club football, and I was really good for my age, played up in that. And then that became the norm for me. So I ended up playing senior footy when I was 15 against men in Queensland. And the year that I got drafted to, I went to North first, was a lot of guys remember Nick Riewoldt. He was the number one pick. So up until that period, there'd been one or two guys drafted in about 6 years from Queensland. And then in that 1 year, there was probably eight players ended up coming out of that group of players that I'd grown up with, and they're all a year or two older than me. And I think the fact that we had these guys together that played against each other, there weren't many of us who were on the same team, but we had this culture of competitiveness and I don't know what the right word was, but we all knew each other and we loved each other, but we hated each other. And I think marrying that up with just the little challenges all along the way, plus the competitive nature of these guys, we all ended up getting drafted together, and most of us have had some success, whether it's premierships or, Nick Riewoldt's obviously up in life all the time. He's a media personality, but a lot of guys have had success, which is brilliant. And that then took me to Melbourne. I got drafted bottom age, which I think it was the last year you get drafted. So I was 17, moved to Melbourne, moved in with a host family, and I didn't get paid for the first 3 months because the club I was at, North Melbourne, they were broke. So I was living off $0 as a 17-year-old trying to go to uni.
That actually sounds like most 17-year-olds though, Prady.
It is. And that's what – and this is where I've been really fortunate that I've actually got to live the successful round success and AFL, which is an elite sport, and then I've had to actually fight for all of it. So yeah. I feel like it gives me a real perspective. So that was the beginning. Played a bit of footy. I went from North back to Brisbane, had a couple of hiccups, which set me back a little bit in regards to probably my maturity. That's probably the best way to describe it. And then ended up back at North and had, you know, a reasonably successful career, which then led into coaching, which has now led me to talking to you right now, mate. So,
yeah, awesome.
The journey's been really good. I wouldn't change anything that I've done because I wouldn't be sitting here right now in this situation if I had done something differently, which I talk a lot about to players and people that it's a lot like they regret things they've done, but I've done a lot of silly things and a lot of positive things. And I think, well, if I hadn't have done them, I wouldn't be sitting here right now and I wouldn't have learned the lessons that I learned. So it's an optimistic view.
It's life, isn't it? You know, like at the end of the day, we've all got that journey that we're, you know, it's laden with mistakes made and things that we'd say, look, if we had my time again, but we don't have our time again and we don't have that time machine that can whip us back and sort of say, well, with the wisdom that I have on my shoulders now, I would have done things differently. You just said it, you know, you're 17-year-old, you're 20-year-old, you're 25-year-old, whatever it be, we just keep learning, right? And I want to pick up on that right now. And this is what I do, Prady. We jump around a bit because I think of different things and I capitalise on different things that are said. One of the other things that I know you've done or you've started, you're three-quarter through, you're doing a psych degree as well, right? So you're coaching at the Eagles when you decided to do this? Was that with the AFLW team? But I remember you started doing that.
Yeah, I think it was in 2018, 2019, I might have started it. So I've just done it part-time, try to fit it around having kids and life and coaching and stuff like that, yes.
And so I guess the reason I bring that up is because, you know, for someone outside looking in, for that matter, they could look at your career where it's at today and they could say, mate, look at the guy, he's Western Bulldogs assistant coach, been with the Eagles, been a player, all these different things. But what I like about your good self, Prady, like many of the people that I speak to, is it's been a continual learning journey, which also means that at times going into playgrounds or environments that are a bit out of your comfort zone and it's challenging, which is like, you know, you're a family man, you've got a lot of things on your plate, but you still chose to put your nose in the books, if you like, and learn more around human behaviour.
Yeah, I find it, well, way back when I first had no money when I was 17, I was doing psychology at, so I started doing a psych degree then, so I had interests way back. And then I don't know why I didn't do it when I played because it's all funded. There's PD money for it. It's, as a player, like ridiculous amounts to use. Like it's unlimited almost. And then as a coach, we get $1,500 a year for PD money, which hasn't changed for about 10 years. I'm just complaining at the moment. But I thought I've got to do something to better myself to stay firstly ahead of the game, but also to stay on track with, I guess my personality and my, I guess the thing I want to get out of my life really, to be honest, which is creating, you know, good people and helping them perform well. So that's why I'm a coach, but. There's a lot of the learnings early, in particular in the base parts of the degree, you do every day as a coach. So a lot of it wasn't too technical for me because we're dealing with young men every single day, every minute of every day. So, and performance. But some of the, the neurology and little bits and pieces behind that, how the chemicals in your brain work, there's a few things like that, which kept me stimulated. And then now I'm back into some boring stuff with some statistical analysis and stuff like that. But trying to stay on it is very hard. It takes a lot of discipline. And I'm about 6 weeks behind this unit at the moment, but I've always found a way to catch up if I do get caught behind. So that'll be my next, as I'm on holidays at the moment, I'll be nailing that down over the coming weeks.
Love it, Praddy. All right, here we go. Let's do it then. Let's use that. Let's take advantage of that to do this. If I say to you right now, resilience, because it can be defined so many different ways. There's ways I use the definition. I've shared this many a time, you know, quoted from the American Psychological Association, our ability to cope, our ability to adapt, our ability to grow, our threshold from, that kind of thing. If I say to Praddy, though, resilience, how would you define it?
Well, it's probably the way you bounce back from setbacks, really. You know, if resilience is actually a scientific word, and they describe, you know, rubber is described as resilient because it always will return to its form. So if you look at it that way, how do you return to your form and the best version that you can provide at that time? So that's how I look at it. And there's so many layers to it. A lot of it's around how you manage stress, really. And I heard you say stress management before. And then performance off the back of that, whether it's sport or life or work or whatever it is, then comes from how you can manage probably the first two things, the resilience and the stress management.
What's a program look like at somewhere like the Dogs? We don't care for, mate, seriously, we don't care for the Eagles. I don't even think they're here in Perth anymore. I think we got rid of them. They're bringing over the North Sydney Bears to play rugby league over here. So I think the Eagles are done, mate.
Oh, they're back.
We don't, there's yeah. Mate, let's be honest. They've got the breaking strain of a Kit Kat, right? Let's talk proper football teams now. Western Bulldogs. What's the program look like there as far as working on people's mental skills, their resilience, their stress management? What does it look like at the Western Bulldogs?
Well, every environment's different. West Coast, up until COVID, we put a lot of time and effort into it. We had a mindfulness program, which Mark Nikoski ran. There was a lot of work around mental preparation. We called it Performance Edge. There was set time in the program for it. The Bulldogs is a much more free environment. So, and what I mean by that is, the individual coaches can put their own personality and spin on how they coach their players.
Right.
Which I personally like that. I do like some structure, but it gives me freedom to use my skills more than previously. I was part of developing the programs at West Coast with Adam Simpson and the other coaches, but I can it's a bit more ad hoc here. So Luke Beveridge is an environment and culture man. He really likes to drive, you know, positivity and optimism within the four walls, and any feedback that's not positive is face to face and behind closed doors. If that is what's needed, if it's behind closed doors is what's needed, we'll do that. But the mental part behind all of that is giving a lot. Feedback's a great way to build resilience. I think, is only built from having to be resilient. Like, you can't say, I'm going to be resilient. Like, you can have positive affirmations, but until if you just think about your brain, the only way to build the strength of resilience is by being resilient. So I think it's really important to give feedback that's direct and positive, but you've got to do it at the right time and when the player or the staff member or the person's ready for it. And then helping them bounce back by giving some direction or a plan, I guess is a good way to look at it, and some direction is how they bounce back. So the mental side of it, you can go really deep, like mindfulness, there's all these different things which builds stress management and, you know, resilience in the brain. But that, if you're not skilled at it or you don't know how to do it, you're wasting your time. You've actually got to really commit to things like that. But having little moments every day where you have to be mentally strong is what I see is the best way to build resilience, I reckon, in the current environment after what's happened with COVID, and there's a lot of the Gen Z crew that are coming through now. You can't whack them and just go, oh, yeah, you go work it out yourself. You'll be back tomorrow. It doesn't work like that anymore. So that's the environment I grew up in sport. And now it's changed. So yeah, there's so many ways you can do it, but I feel like the freedom to be a leader and have my own personality on it is what gives the best opportunity to help individuals build that resilience that we're talking about.
So when you say feedback, Praddy, and you say positive feedback, correct me if I'm wrong, but you're not just suggesting that it's always got to be positive, you mean it's be delivered in a positive way, because clearly there's got to be come to truth moments.
Oh, definitely. I was talking to someone the other day, I can't remember who it was, and they were asking me about different types of feedback. I was a coach, different types of feedback, and the old analogy of the shit sandwich, you give them something positive, then you tell them what you need to tell them, yeah, and then you give them something positive again. I think things have changed in that space. And when I look at especially in my industry, the leadership, how it's developing, this constant feedback, and you can't give feedback like that anymore, because the younger players, especially guys who are under 25 and even under 30 now, if you say one negative thing to them in the wrong environment, they don't listen to anything else you say. So being able to positively reinforce information or evidence that you've got that supports them getting better, it's easy in front of people because they like seeing themselves on the screen, and or whether it's, you know, the affirmation in front of their peers. But the other part, as soon as you knock blokes down, in particular, I think males are becoming worse than females in this space personally, they can't deal with the next piece of information, which is usually the way out. So how do I get out of this? Well, I'm going to tell you, but if you can't listen, we can't do it. So the right place, the right time to give any feedback's important. You've got to think about that as a leader. I don't think the old school method of berating people, like the fear factor of being berated in front of your peers or standing up in front of a group and questioning someone's ability, is the right way to go about it anymore. It just doesn't last. It's just going out. And I actually like being told the truth. Funnily enough, I like getting feedback like that. So I'd rather just be told. I ask for feedback every day, and I don't care who it's in front of. It's an opinion, and I can then decide what I do with it. But if you don't get feedback, that's probably worse than not getting any at all. So
yeah, and I like that, Pratt. I mean, we talk a lot about that, and it's a lot of the work that, you know, my team does, in the sense that we provide a level of feedback, whether to be positively reinforce something or to give some truth, give some information. But I like your point. You know, it's about where you do that, and considering the uniqueness of the audience, whoever it be, because again, there's a different response mechanism. Like you said, young blokes under the age of 25 do not receive it well, and others have, with a little bit more maturity around them or a little bit more wisdom around them, may receive it well. So I like that, mate. What I want to ask you, Pratty, is this: jumping a little bit ahead to current day. So you're a family man. You're assistant coach there, full time, the Western Bulldogs. You've got a few other things going on in your world that are great. What's the ritual? What's the discipline? What's the routine that you follow, you personally follow, to allow you to, one, be the best version of yourself, and two, recharge from tough, stressful days, whatever it will be? What's the Pratty method of looking after himself?
Yeah, there's one of the things that I've realised over the whole journey is I can't be who I need to be for other people, whether it's my family or the players I coach or the staff I work with, if I'm not in the right head frame, so, or my mindset. So I've focused on that a lot since probably maybe since 2017. I really started honing on that because I identified I was single till 2016 when I met my partner, and I was happy to go have a beer with the boys and I felt, you know, enjoy myself, and I felt like that became, I won't say it was excessive, but I felt like, oh, it was just an easy out at the end of the day, go down to the Scarborough foreshore, have a few beers. Next minute I'm getting back to my apartment and I'm trying to knock over some work before I'd go to work the next day, and it wasn't really productive. So those ebbs and flows, I thought, I've got to sort this out. And then what I've tried to do since is find a routine for blocks of time, not for this is what I do for the next 20 years. Yeah, okay, what am I going to do this year? And I've done work, PD work on this, but the day-to-day stuff, which is PD, like every morning when I get into the football club about 6 o'clock, and I know people in mining start a lot earlier than that, and this isn't obviously might not be applicable to everyone, but I'll go straight to the sauna and people think I'm crazy. So I crank it up to 110 and I get in and I do a workout in the sauna when it's at 110.
Awesome.
And it really cooks me up. And then I do ice baths after that. So I normally spend about 20 minutes in there, get out, do an ice bath. That's on the exercise, do an ice bath, and then I'll stay in for another 20 ice bath. And then I go straight into a meeting, to the meetings that we've got, which are usually around 7. So that then, when I look at all the things that I try to coach every day, is that's building me my resilience. Like, it gets very hot. You can imagine doing, 150, 200 push-ups and then squats and star jumps and burpees. And it is painful, but that is my way of maintaining my levels of resilience. And when it gets hard, I'm like, you can't leave till it's 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's days when I get in the ice bath and I stay in for a minute and it gets to 45 seconds and I get out and I have to actually force myself to get back in for that last 15 seconds, because if I don't, I feel like I'm going back to the old habits. And now this is just a ritual for me. And other coaches walk in and they think I'm an idiot. They think I'm crazy doing it. But then I feel like it sets me up for the whole day. And it makes me go to bed early the night before. It keeps me off the piss. Those little things which can influence, like, sleep is critical to resilience. And if you don't sleep well, then how do I get up and do that exercise when I'm feeling shit out? So there's little things like that. And I try to always change it up all the time. It's in Melbourne, it's a new environment for me, so I'm motivated to it, but something's going to run out at some point, so I'm going to have to find the next thing that keeps me going.
I like what you said there, though, the blocks of time, the line of work that I'm in, Brady, I talk a lot about, I say to people, what's your plan, what's your goal and everything else, and I'm definitely not talking about What do you see yourself in 5 years, 10 years, 15? That for me is just rhetoric, right? For me, it's blocks of time, and so I've just made a little note here. I love that, because I try to say to people, no, let's make this a bit fairer to ourselves and realistic. What is the block, right? What is the we're talking about? What's the next compartmentalized block or whatever it needs to be? So I like that, because we're often very guilty of thinking too far into the future or fusing too far to the past. Not just focused on something that's really fair and generous to ourselves, but will still require a strong level of discipline to ensure that we actually do that and achieve that. So I love that, mate. I like the block of time piece. Also, I like the fact that with the schedule that you have, with the profile that you have, the brand, the responsibility you have, that you still prioritize self. And many of the people that I know here in this organization, they're great at doing that, but there's also many that are not so great at doing it. The next question I want to ask you, Paddy, off the back of that then is, yep, you go and do burpees in a 150-degree sauna. I just have to exaggerate it. The fact you do burpees...
Yeah, sounds good.
The fact you do burpees full stop, that's pretty staunch. That's pretty impressive. Anyone that does a burpee is cringing right now, right? So you do your burpees, you do your sauna, you study psychology, you work as a coach in the AFL... But surely Pratty carves out a block of time for himself just to have some fun. What's fun look like for Pratty these days?
Yeah, well, it's amazing how life works. There's going to be people listening and they're like, this guy's talking shit, or this guy, that's interesting. And it's all how you just relate to the messaging, not actually what I'm doing. But I'm a surfer as well, so... I would surf every day in Perth, whether it was 1 foot or 6 foot, whether it was onshore, offshore conditions, good or bad. I'd go to Bali every opportunity to go surfing. Down south, everyone I lived prior to that, I'd go down to Torquay 2-3 times a week here. And then I had kids. And the fun for yourself changes. So what I've actually been able to do, which took a long time, and my partner helped me a lot with this, was just presence. And kids are hard work, and everyone who's got kids knows that, but when you actually sit there with them and join in, that becomes fun. When you're sitting there thinking this is hard work, it's hard work. So I've tried to get down for a surf a bit more of recent times. I've probably been 4 or 5 times. There's a wave pool in Melbourne, so I've been there a few times as well. So I've probably been going once a fortnight to once a month into the ocean, which was always my meditation time, I guess. But I've really found ways to interact with the kids better, whether it's at the park or, my daughter likes, she's 5, she likes doing maths, and that's something I like numbers. So I have fun with her with doing that on the chalkboard. So it took a lot of time, and it was probably more self-awareness of how I was hurting myself and how I was actually probably influencing them as well. And once I worked that out, it's been so much easier. I've still plead with my partner to go to Bali as soon as the season finishes, but there's all these other things. I'm getting married next week or the week after to her. We got done over during COVID because of everything like that. But she's like, no, next year, just wait. We just got to sort out this other stuff first. So, it's been a challenge. But the surfing for me is just, if I touch the water, the brain just lets go. And I love doing it. Yeah, but you get worse at it the less you do. So sometimes it becomes frustrating, but I've learned not to get frustrated.
Love it, mate. Love it. Well, let's pick up on that then. Now let's do a shameless plug. You know, Praddy, you've got a little side tribe. That's what I'll call it, a little side tribe, being Impact Zone. Which is a venture you've got, a community you've got, services that you provide, so on and so forth. Using your expertise and some people around you and everything else. But a big part of that is retreats, Bali retreats. Talk to me about what that's all about.
Yeah, well, prior to COVID, I did a silent retreat, which I've actually got my Bucks party today. And
today?
This afternoon.
I was going to say we should start now. Let's start. Everyone grab a drink. We're all invited. Let's go.
We're all invited. So my really close mates, there's about 15 guys coming to it. Yeah. And when they heard these cruel guys that I did a silent retreat, their head nearly exploded. They're like, what are you doing? And it was one of the hardest things, one of the best things I did. So 5 days, no talking. And then after that, I stayed at a place called Commune Beach Resort, which it's a health hub on the east coast of Bali. And there's a surf break straight at the front, so I was comboing everything up. It's a world-class surf break, so there's a lot of good surfers there. There was families there. And I tried to continue on as long as I could without talking, and people thought I was an idiot because they'd come and be social because it's in the middle of nowhere. There's nothing else to do. And I just wanted to stick to this, what I'd been doing, because it made me feel really good. And I got to the end of the week, and this guy, I don't even know, I can't remember his name.
Well, you never spoke to him.
It was his last, I didn't know. And I said, mate, I'm really sorry. I feel like a flog what I've done to you. Because he tried to have a beer with me every night. And I said, look, well, let's have a few beers. But he goes, I'm going today. And I told him, and he goes, mate, you should start something like this up. So what I did, I ended up doing it for the West Coast players. So in the off season of 22, 12 of the players, I set up a retreat for them. And now that's like a ritual for them. So they go and they've done some different things, and now I've left, I can't influence them anymore. They ask me questions, but I set up a retreat for them, and it was a wellness / training retreat. And they had a bloody ball. So they got fit. It was 2 weeks before they started back for preseason. So they got their body hardened. They got fit. The yoga meditation teacher there, she was brilliant. And then I outsourced some other people to come in. And now I stay in contact with all those people now. So, yeah, so there's that. I've been working with coaches in football, like community level, with mentoring and bits and pieces like that. And then I've got a few people I've done work with outside of that in the business world. So I've drawn it all together, really. The first thing, which is I get pleasure in making people better. That's why I do what I do. And I think all these skills I've been gaining, which you don't realize at the time, they're at an elite level. So we're in the most elite sport in the country, and have had the highest level of success. So there must be things there that I do well that I can connect to other people, whether it's business world or it's just people who want to make themselves better. And that's what I'm providing. And I've got a number of different coaches who have got similar skill sets to myself. They're different people. They're not the same as me. They're all very different, but they've got high level skill sets, and you know, and the intuition with these types of things is quite good. So I've connected them up as well. I've added you to the list, mate, because of our relationship, as you know.
Yeah,
but
I appreciate that.
It's something that I'm passionate about, and if I can help people and it helps me, I'm a win-win man. So we'll see where it goes.
Well, I mean, yeah, Praddy, and you know, we've talked a lot, and for me, it's about having a good tribe around you, right? And you know, I keep making a piece or a quote to people that I speak to around the fact that no one ever conquered alone, right? We do it through a tribe, you know. And I also have grown, as I've got older, I've grown to really love that quote that has been thrown around forever and a day, that, you know, show me your friends and I'll show you your future. And I've given a lot of thought to that in more recent time. And it's easy for me to do the analysis. I don't have any friends. But at the end of the day, it's important to put good people around you and not be the leader of the pack either. You know, like be have people around you that you can learn from, you can grow from, you can be challenged by, you get that feedback from, so on and so forth. And then at the same time, they'd all have collective strengths that we can leverage and take advantage of. So when I talk resilience with people, it's a key piece that I speak to, the need to have a good tribe around you. And you can have yep. several tribes, right? You've got your family as a tribe. You got the Western Bulldogs coaching team as a tribe. You've got your external tribes. You know, it's crucial to have that. So it's a really, really powerful piece. Praddy, sleep. You've got a five-year-old daughter that runs you ragged. You've got a wedding coming up. You're still coming off the high of, you know, being the coach of the year and a season that's just had. You're going to review periods if you haven't already. How do you ensure that you get a good night's sleep?
Well, yeah, it's difficult. I've got to be careful what I say. I'm at home for my partner here. This year,
I will just edit it out. Don't worry about it. We'll edit it out. She won't know.
No, well, we've got a 5 and a 2-year-old, and when we moved from the west over east, we went through Queensland. There was a function to go to in Queensland, and we had a holiday. So it was a 3-week period. So the 2-year-old ended up. We never said her at the time. She was one, the cot up. And so she ended up in our bed. Now we've got them into their own beds, but my partner ends up there all the time. So because I get up early.
Yeah.
If I go in there, I'm getting up at 5 o'clock and I wake them up. That pisses everyone off. So so I actually get to sleep by myself a lot.
Yeah.
Which is, I give her credit, my partner. She does a great job. But if I do notice a difference, whether we have a lot of functions at this time of year. We had the club best and fairest a couple of nights ago, and I had to speak. I was the second last speaker for the night. It was at 10:30, and I was so lucky because I didn't end up. I only had a couple of beers, but you can go to those nights just to enjoy yourself. So I woke up fresh as a daisy yesterday. I was only up about 5-6 hours sleep, but the backlog of sleep was good. But I know the difference. Like tomorrow after my Bucks party, I know how I'm going to be feeling, and you just can't perform at your best. So I won't be having any conversations of importance tomorrow. But I could imagine for a lot of people who work in your industry, the lifestyle is difficult, especially when you're on site. So being able to actually switch off at 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock at night to be able to get a good sleep is critical. There's so much evidence behind being able to bounce back by having good quality sleep.
Yeah.
And you can look it up on the internet, it's everywhere, but just the way your brain operates. It's like anything. It's like a bicep curl. Your bicep gets bigger by doing by having, you know, a force against it with the curl. Your brain's the same, but if you don't recover with your bicep, you try to do bicep curls every day, it takes a lot longer for the fibers to repair and heal and all that sort of stuff. It's the same with your brain. So sleep's the recovery for your attempts to build resilience or stress management. It's actually the way you recover. And if you don't do it, it really, really hurts you. Not might not be immediate, but it can come up on you pretty quickly. It can catch up on you in 2 days. It might catch up after a month. It might catch up after a year, depending on how resilient you are, but you can't, you just can't. It's the old burn the candle at both ends. Yeah. You can't do it.
I like what you know, Pratty. So my wife and I have a very similar arrangement as well. We often go our separate ways when it comes to sleeping, right? We really do, because we have different lifestyles and everything else. And it's funny, when my mum was alive, God bless her, you know, she became aware of it at one stage that occasionally I'd sleep in a different room to my wife or vice versa. And my mum was horrified by that, horrified, and you know, wanted to put me in front of counselling and all sorts of things, I'm sure, because there's got to be something wrong with your marriage. You're not sharing the marital bed together and everything else. But, mate, I think it strengthens relationship, right? Because at the end of the day, it's important that we get a good night's rest. And if we've got different lifestyles, same for myself, I like to go to bed early. I'd like to get up really early. In return, I need sort of a lot of quiet. My wife is different. She likes to stay up late. She likes some stimulus, whether it be playing on the tablet or whatever it be. And then she didn't have to start work near as early and so on and so forth. So it was important we had our own space as well. So I think I like that, because societal norm is no. You both got to go in the bedroom together. You both got to go there at 9 o'clock or 8 o'clock or whatever it be. You both got to get up together, and that's what makes a strong marriage. Like hell, man, because under fatigue, you'd be at each other, right? So I like that. Yep. Sometimes you just got to carve out a space for ourselves, and it's got to be reciprocal, of course, right? You share it in return.
Yep.
Because the whole thing about when we talk about resilience, for me, it's about our ability, on top of a suite of different things, it's our ability to problem solve, right? And as you and I know, and most listening would know, you know, as soon as we're fatigued, that brain's like that video game player, in the sense that energy bar just depletes aggressively, that cognition disperses on us and so on and so forth, and we can't problem solve, or we can't problem solve as effective as we should. So I think that's a big missing component in modern society, because people try to maximise every minute of the day, right? Whereas we should be optimising it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I've been through both phases where, like, sometimes less is more, and I think people forget that, especially I saw a couple of faces come up earlier, and there's obviously different levels of, I guess, maturity and time spent as leaders or in your industry. And then you've got the people who are starting out and being promoted to positions of leadership. And sometimes you think you've got to do more, and it's not, you're not, you do have to do more, but how you manage that, the optimization, I think is a great word that you just used, is critical. And you can't do it unless you're able to be resilient. Like, the stress just becomes higher the higher you go, but that doesn't mean you should cope with it differently. Whether it's your first day of work, because that's stressful. Your first day at a job is as stressful as probably as it is for the CEO every day. So all these things you're learning, if you don't manage your time well, your sleep, for example, how you think about things, if you're not taking the time to think about it, you're gonna get yourself in a pickle. So I think the optimization is a great word. How do you optimize, not maximize? I think that's a great way to look at it.
I'm not running off on you, Pratty. I'm just trying to remember something that I noted down the other day, and I've just got to find it. It eludes me for a second. I've got it on my wall here. I've spoke to you before. We talk about, you know, the wonderful Moz, Dr. Phil Jauncey, who works with Wayne Bennett at the Dolphins and South.
The Mozzie.
Yeah, the Mozzie. So we're doing some work with Moz last week again, and I know you know Moz and everything else. But it was something, the Lawrence's Law or something, Greg Cream, Jeff, someone put in the messages, I can't remember what it is, but it virtually alludes to the fact that if I gave you 2 hours, if I gave you 2 weeks to clean your bedroom, you'll fill them, right? And so, you know, the piece for me is the fact that you might turn around and carve out this thing that you say, look, here's a goal I need to achieve. I've got to clean my room. I'll give myself a burning platform. I'll give myself an hour to do it, or I'll give myself 2 hours to do it, and you'll get it done. And you'll get it done, for that matter, well. But if I also say to myself, look, I've got to clean my room, but I'll give myself a couple of weeks to achieve that task, I'll use that 2 weeks. And what they've discovered is that in a working environment, people come into work and work for 8 hours, and then ultimately not quite achieve what they want to because they didn't really optimize. They tried to maximize. They got themselves distracted, fatigued, whatever it be. So the next minute they'll come in for 10 hours, next minute 12 hours, and they create new norms all the time. And if they're really measuring what a day looks like at 14-hour mark comparative to the day at 8-hour mark, they're actually not achieving anything more effectively. They're just finding a way to fill those hours. So I think that's a problem for us all.
Yeah, it is. And then you've got I agree. And then there's the the new generation of people coming through. They're actually doing the opposite to a degree. Not everyone, but they're finding ways to be there for less hours and try to do the same quality of work. So there's a balancing act. It's like we've got these two generations of people and they're trying to work each other out. And how do we meet in the middle? That's something I'm really, really keen on. I'm living it firsthand at the moment. Dealing with 17 to 30 year old men every day, and you're trying to negotiate. It's constant negotiation. So, and it's negotiation with them, with me. It's them negotiating with themselves. It's the point I made before about do you spend that last 15 seconds in the ice bath or do you get out? And it's probably a lot to do with the standards that you want to keep. So, yeah, I find it really hard to explain to people this process, but the point you've just made, I think it's like a spiral losing control by what you're saying. You need a way to draw it back, and I think self-reflection, self-awareness is really critical for that.
Yeah, and Prady, do you with players, and I want to wrap this up in a sec because I want to give the opportunity for people to ask any questions and share anything in return. I mean, we'll get a bit of quiet, Prady. That's generally what happens because either A, people are still digesting some of the session, two, obviously in front of our peer group and there's a few people logged in and everything else, people at times aren't that comfortable to ask, but they send a message later or whatever it be and I can pass that on.
Yeah.
Or three, they just don't like you, to be honest with you. They're all Penrith supporters or something like that. And so that shit happens as well, Prady. But don't worry about it. It's the same.
Well, they're going to get another medal this week. So
you talk about feedback, Prady. I mean, I get plenty of not great feedback, but the great thing about it is I delete it. And so I get Montana, who is the coaching coordinator for our team, and Montana's just awesome at editing things for me and doctoring things and everything else. So the performance reviews and the feedback that I've got all say I'm awesome, so don't worry about it. Mate, we can do that for you. So, Prady, when it comes to planning, right, and this is, we've got a small window here before I throw you to the group. When it comes to planning, it because I don't like the term, but I like the intent of journaling, right? And what I mean by that is the Marcus Aurelius stuff. I reflect on the day that I've just had. I take some notes around that, and then I use those same notes to plan for the day ahead because the intent is not to repeat or to learn from the lesson productive, right? So with the playing team, with yourself, is that a process? Is that a practice that's applied where players are expected to sort of take some notes and build off those notes?
Yeah, well, I find the attention span of young men in particular is about 15 minutes if you can keep them engaged with whatever you're doing. So I think being able to just jot down a few notes, like I've got my iPad here, I was going to write down a couple of things straight after, but you can't, like, the retention rate just from writing increases by about 15%. So if you connect that then to personal growth and development, like, if you don't, I hate the word journaling too. Like, when I see on people's computer, they've got a journal.
No, all right, keep going.
It doesn't seem like a great word. Like, and
it's got to be self-awareness and
whatever the word is, come up with your own word. But just talking about resilience, even being resilient all the time isn't a good thing either, because it actually takes you away from being emotionally connected. Because when you have to be resilient, sometimes you've actually got to chop things. Like I've got to cut that out. So I've got to cut that thought out or whatever it is to keep going. So unless you actually sit down and think about how you've been resilient or how you've had a great day or bad day at work by reflection, you actually don't, you can't, it's really hard to grow. Because like people have said to me about my, they say, oh, you've got a lot of resilience. And then my partner says to me, you've got low emotional intelligence. Like it's happened before. She probably says it once a day, but no, she doesn't really. But it, and I think, well, hang on, is that, that resilience that I've got eating away at my relationship? Because I can move on quickly. Like I've got a delete button in my head, which I know things have happened, but I'll go, I can put that over there and I'll have to let it go. But unless I actually think about it, it doesn't, by either writing or actually having deep thought about things, it's really hard. So with the players, for example, when they're young, the young men, and they're all leaders in their own right, because they're at the highest level, to help them grow quickly, you have to teach them how to reflect, because a lot of them will walk out of the room and you'll, I walk around and ask guys after we've had a meeting, or they come from one meeting to another when we train our different offense, defense. I'll always ask them, what did you talk about in the last meeting? Or what were the key points from that meeting that you could take away to training today? And some of them have forgotten straight away. So, and we're talking about something that's the most important thing of their life at that moment.
Yeah.
Not, it's not the deep part of trying to be a better person, which they probably think about, but they don't think about it every minute. They're, all they're thinking about is, I want to be the best AFL player ever. So it's a priority for them, and they're still not getting it right. So that's the one of the challenges. And someone said to me the other day, actually, it was quite humorous. They said to me, you're an idiot. I said, why? They said, you put your livelihood in the hands of 18 to 30-year-old men. It's a silly, silly thing to do. And it's good. And it's so true. But then when I think about that, I'm like, all right, how can I help these guys? And little bits of – I'm not an overbearing coach. I don't ride them, or I don't – like the conversation we've had today, I don't go into this detail with them. I think about the detail, and then I'll just provide them with what they need to know. But or the little – the gold nuggets I can give them. But you've got to – whether you're a leader who's been around for a long time, you're trying to adapt or move forward, or you're a first day in a higher position, you do need to think about how you help your people and how you can help yourself.
Love it, mate. That's probably a nice way to close out. And we talk about the note take. Well, I've been scratching a bunch of notes down here and everything else. So, Brady, what I'm going to do is I'm going to say thank you first and foremost, and given that it's your buck show and today, and you've already, I mean, I had to ask you not to have him in shot, the bourbon that you had in your hand a minute ago. I mean, and given the time difference, I mean, I'm just seeing it at 7 o'clock in the morning and watching you drink this bourbon. I thought, you know, well, that's why I've stopped doing it. So, mate, well done to you. Congratulations. And also, obviously, you know, congratulations again on the Assistant Coach of the Year award, because I think that's a real testament to the bloke that I've known for the last few years, in the sense that, you know, you haven't stopped. You've followed a dream. You've persevered. You've shown some grit and determination. You've listened to different perspectives and different people you've learned from, and you remain really humble throughout that journey. So, mate, well done to you.
Thanks for having me, Clay.
Yeah, awesome, mate. Well, what we're going to do is we're going to throw it open. Like I said, Pretty, don't be scared by the silence. We get it. What we do is later we splice in. Montana's brilliant. She splices in all this cheering and noise and everything else, and we make it just sound like you and I were both superstars. Is anyone got anything they'd like to just say to Pretty, to ask the question of? Whatever, please. Take advantage of. Help me out a little bit. Throw something out. Will Diaz, good boy, what have you got? Talk to me. Talk to Pratty, not me. You can't put your hand up and then...
Yeah, I was talking to myself. Only the guys sitting around me are listening. They have no idea what I'm talking about. Hey, guys. Dan, look, mate, we have this tendency to idolize you guys. We see these high decorated athletes, and it's very, very empowering to hear when you go through the stuff that we normal people go through every day. And it really helps us to rethink, rebuild, and also to think that we can achieve. Because sometimes we look at people like you guys and we kind of lower ourselves, like we're never going to reach that level. But then to see, like, you deal with kids like I do, you have to discuss with your wife, hey, I got to wake up so early. Who's going to go and see Benji, who keeps waking up at 1 a.m.? And you know, it's interesting to see that we share these same scenarios. And look, mate, all the best for your wedding, and may you have a very happy life. And yeah, be merry. Well done. And thanks for sharing. It was really good today. Cheers.
No worries. Thanks. We'll appreciate the comments, mate. We are all equal. Yeah, so I appreciate that thought, mate.
Good stuff. I just
said there's a question on there, Clay. There's a question from Tate Andrew. Do you want to read it out?
Yeah, in relation to resilience and maintaining high performance, what's it like working with a bond? What are you masking, eh, Tate? What do you got, brother?
He's an absolute champion, that man. From afar.
Who, Tate or Bont?
I remember. Well, Bont's it. I'm talking about Tate at the moment. But, and then I'll move on to Bont. But I've coached against him for years, and he won his sixth best and fairest the other night. What you see on TV and how he's perceived publicly is what you get in person. It's my first year at Bulldogs, and last year at the Christmas party, there was hundreds of people there, and he came over, he grabbed me one-on-one, and he's like, let's have a drink. I haven't got to have a chat with you. So I thought, oh, we'll go have a beer. And he lines up four shots. And I was like, it was his way of including me in the group. It's not a drinking culture at all, but it was the Christmas party, so we were all having a drink. And he'll stop and he'll listen to you talk. So a lot of players, especially as they get better, you have a conversation or and they'll have a, you'll have, they'll look, oh, okay, and then, but he'll stop and he'll ask another question. I just remembered a story about him which is hilarious. So we had a get together at a bowls club one afternoon, and my daughters came, and my 1-year-old daughter at the time had a little teddy, a little baby teddy thing, and she made Bont hold it for the whole day, and she had no idea who he is. He's the best player in the comp, voted by his peer, and he held it and he followed her around for the whole day. And I thought he's a good man, yeah, because he's not fobbing anyone off.
Yeah.
So if that's your question, Tate, he's high performance man. He drives standards, and he's a good person. Like, they're probably the three main things you want to be known by.
Great stuff, Praddy. Praddy, mate, we're going to wrap it up there because people are starting to log off fast here, because this is a high-performance environment, and everyone wants to tear into it on a Friday and hopefully get out of here before 7 o'clock tonight. So, Praddy, again, mate, massive thank you. You and I will speak in a few weeks' time. You go and have a great bucks again, and obviously a great wedding, and get some good rest and deserved recharge after a great season.
Thanks, Clay. Thanks, guys, for listening. I really appreciate it. I hope you all have a good day and into the end of the year.
Good on you, Praddy. You're the man. Thank you, brother. Cheers. See you, guys.